You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is Internet Marketing. So welcome back to the show where we give you the lowdown, the inside information and the word from the experts to help you use the internet as part of your marketing machine. Internet Marketing is brought to you by AI Digital at www.ai-digital.com. And in episode 40, we examine the best ways of using email in your internet marketing arsenal. Everything from selecting the right subject line to how people read email. And we talk to Kieran Rogers about how he is integrating an email marketing analysis tool with his CRM system. All coming up in Internet Marketing. Hello everyone, Andy White here, and welcome to another episode of Internet Marketing with our resident expert, Mr. Daniel Rowles.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Daniel. Now, let's start off with where we would normally have the news. You've got a sort of newsy type comment to make, haven't you? Because you've been reading a certain book that I have also not read, but listened to.
Yeah, there's a fantastic book called The 4-Hour Work Week by Timothy Ferriss. And not only is it a fantastic read, it's a very engaging, entertaining book. There's some really practical stuff in there on being more effective and shortening the amount of time you waste on doing stupid things at work. And I'll let you read the book, but I definitely recommend it as a read. It's very entertaining. And Timothy Ferriss is one of those hugely irritating people that seems to have done an awful lot with his life and is very engaging and talented and witty and all the kind of things you dislike in a person.
And he's younger than us, I think, isn't he, Dan?
Yeah, he's 29, I think, for last time I remember reading. So maybe
he's only a bit younger than me then.
Yeah, exactly. Only a couple of weeks, probably, Andy. The key thing I wanted to pick out is after reading the book, one of the things that Tim, I'll call him now, recommends is building these businesses that basically can residual income coming in. And he talks a fair bit about how you can use internet marketing, digital marketing for do that. Now, what I was really impressed with is that he's really filtered down some of the best websites, some of the best references, some of the best tutorials and services you can use. Okay, so first of all, go out and buy the book. Go to the website, which is 4hourworkweek.com, where it's got his blog on there and there's some extensions on these kind of things. But there's a references section on there. And if you buy the book and go to the website, you pick a password out of the book. There's a kind of hidden word in the book. And you can go to the tools and tricks section. And there is some absolutely brilliant stuff in there for calculating how effective a business may be, but also looking at return from pay-per-click campaigns, which I thought was particularly useful for some of our listeners. Some great places for looking at where you can get tutorials and further information on setting up kind of internet businesses as well. And I just think it's a good resource. So go and have a look. 4hourworkweek.com. There's some good articles in there on Twitter and how to use blogging and a whole host of other really interesting stuff that's got absolutely nothing to do with digital marketing as well. But I'd recommend having a look at the website. And if you like the look at the website, maybe go and grab the book. And then I'll expect to see my royalties soon, please, Tim.
Now, today's main subject, Dan, is making email marketing more effective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We go out and talk about email marketing all the time, and we've mentioned it on the podcast a few times as well. And we kind of talked about the basics of getting your list right and don't be too spammy and, you know, delivery results and all those kind of things. Now, I think there's some key tips just to take a step back from that and actually think about, you know, what's the most important thing. And we've done some training recently that has really reinforced this and testing of this whole thing. And I just wanted to go a few top tips in terms of email marketing and what can be effective. Because email marketing is such a cheap route to market. And with the current economic situation in the US and in the UK and kind of spreading through Europe, people are tightening up their marketing budgets. They're looking how they can spend their money more effectively, which they should probably be doing all the time anyway, but it's coming into its own a bit more at the moment. So I thought I'd just say, look at these key things and then see how that kind of improves your email marketing. Because email marketing is one of those things, if you get it right, can be fantastically useful. So a couple of key things. Get the subject line right. Such an obvious thing that people get horribly wrong. You need to make sure a few things with your subject line. Your subject line needs to make sure your email is opened, and it needs to make sure the email gets past spam filters. So first of all, if you've got free special offer, money off, those kind of things, it could get you into a spam filter. So you need to check it. There are ways of checking how spammy your email appears to be. One of the ones we use Pure as an email tool. If you go to pure360.com, you can get a free trial of the tool, and it's actually got a spam checker built into it. There are various other spam checkers out there in the market. If you look at Google and just do email spam check, you'll see loads of bits of free software. Some are more effective than others, but we found the Pure tool to be quite good. The other thing is, okay, you want people to open your email from the subject line. So you need to make it quite interesting without being obtuse. Now that's without being difficult to understand. Now that's not an easy thing to necessarily do. One of the key things is that a little bit of a call to action in a email kind of subject line can really help. So something like, how does your wage compare to others in your industry is one of the classic ones for getting people to open it up. You know, how does your business do compared to others? Give people an indication of what they can actually learn and get from their email at the end of the day. Okay. Think about your subject lines, but then when you send your email, think of a few variations and test it. If you've got 100,000 email addresses, don't just do two batches of 50,000 and see what happens. Pick a small segment first of 10,000 or 1,000, split that and send it, then send it out to the rest of your list. Don't use a massive amount of your data for testing, because you'll find at the end of the day that you've lost a fair bit. Okay. Not that I'm suggesting you shouldn't test. One of the other key things with emails is continue to test. Okay. Split your list, split it three ways, split it five ways, test different subject lines, different calls to action, different headings, but do it one at a time, because otherwise you'll make five changes, send it out, and you don't know which one of the changes has actually made the big difference, which is one of the biggest mess ups in variance testing that happens an awful lot. Okay. So of your 10 or your 10,000, pick a few. I mean, to do proper testing, you're probably looking at numbers of the hundreds and thousands rather than the tens. It's quite hard to do testing without those kind of numbers, okay? The other thing is that at the beginning of your email, okay, have a call to action as a text link. Now, that sounds a bit counterintuitive. Normally, the call to action comes at the end of the page. The logic behind this is that with Outlook 2007 and an awful lot of other email clients, people basically aren't seeing any of the images in your HTML emails until they've actually wanted to open them. They've said, yes, please open them. So quite often what they see is text and some missing images, and it just doesn't look very good. So if the first thing they see is a call to action and it's got a link of text, it gives them something to engage with and actually understanding what the whole thing's about. If you're doing HTML emails, use a two-column format. I've seen a few people write about this as well. And I, when I was kind of going through this podcast, I read about 400 top 10 tips on email marketing as well, and what other people have been saying about this stuff. And a two column design for email. And we've found this with our clients and with our own emails works well, because it gets more above the fold. You've got a couple of key messages you want to get across, and it allows you to have two key messages at the top of the page before people scroll down. Okay. Now that's really important, because quite often the preview pane that people actually look at an email in is very small. So you want a couple of key messages at the top. If there's more information, they can look at it as they go down. I come back again to this testing before you send. Now, this isn't just in terms of your headlines and your titles and the actual copy itself, but test in different email clients. On average now, people have 3.1 email accounts. I'm not really sure how you have 0.1 of an email account. I don't think it'd be particularly useful, but lots of people have got their work email. They've got a Gmail account or a Hotmail account. They might also have one they use on their mobile phone that's a Hotmail or something similar like that. So bear in mind that your email may work, and you may have been using the same template for 6 months and it's been brilliant, but it may not be working in all these other different email clients. So your click-through rates might go up if you actually just tested in a few different places. If you haven't, make sure you test your emails in Outlook 2007. It is abominable for destroying emails.
Now, Dan, are you specifically talking about HTML emails here?
Actually, for text as well, if they've got kind of rich links in them and things like that as well. And think about the width of the page, all those kind of things as well. Because even if you just test a plain text email with five different email clients, each of them will have a different size preview pane. It'll open up in a different size window, and it'll make a big difference what's above the fold, below the fold, how it looks on the page, how busy it looks. So test both text and HTML emails, which is a very good point, because a lot of people actually, they don't bother testing HTML, text emails, because they just assume they're going to look fine. Okay, so have a real think about that.
One thing I've come across with tech, even just text emails, is crazy wrapping of lines. Like you make the lines really long, sort of hoping that the email client on the other end will wrap sensibly. And you look at it in the email and it's like got one long line, one tiny short line, another long line, another tiny short line.
Yeah, a lot of email clients strip out line feeds and carriage returns. So what happens is that you try and format it really nicely in your text editor, you send it out and it just strips it down to bare basics so it's not too long. So you do need to test in all these different email clients. Also, if you can do it, start to look at mobile devices. How many people now get their emails on BlackBerries and iPhones is phenomenal. So think about how they're going to display. A classic one on the iPhone, you'll get some email saying, this has not been formatted correctly. Please ask the sender to resend in a different format. Well, that's absolutely useless. It's not really very helpful at all. So that's obviously an issue with the iPhone, but at the same time, have a look how you're sending emails. Are you making it too complicated? With iPhones and BlackBerries, people were even more quick to delete emails. It takes so long to download them and to reply and to read them and scroll through them, they're deleting them even more quickly. So do test them, different clients, BlackBerries, iPhones, all the different kind of other phones that are on the market are becoming more important. But those are the two that we really test for at the moment because most people are using on a practical day-to-day basis. Okay. Some other things as well, this thing of mobile devices, it is going to become more and more important.
And the future is mobile, isn't it?
Well, you're seeing the kind of the iPhone isn't doing anything mobile devices couldn't do before, but the interface is easier to use. So what we're suddenly seeing now is better interface design in other phones as well, because they're realizing that has a big issue. So in order for you to get your emails working in all these different devices, which is actually going to become impossible to test in all of them, you want to make your emails as compliant as possible with the W3C standards. Okay, so have a look at the W3C validator, which is validator.w3.org, and you want your email to be an absolutely 100% compliant XHTML. Okay, but then you need to test it in all the email clients as well, because if you start embedding all kinds of clever things that you can use in XHTML, they won't work in email a lot of the time. For example, background images, no good in emails anymore because of Outlook 2007. Okay.
Do email clients generally, what I'm thinking about is when people try and embed fancy objects in their HTML, like for example, say they wanted to send an HTML email with, say for example, a nice flash, yes, that would be interesting, a nice flash audio player button in it. Would that work in most email clients?
Absolutely not. The key thing is don't embed flash, keep your images really simple. Don't try and, if you try and include anything, it's a bad idea. If you've got something linked to the website, get them to look at there. PDF, same thing. They'll distribute, but you're just sending out masses of data. More often than not, what we're trying to do is from an email, get people to the website or to a form and so on. So don't include too much in an email. People are only going to scan them. Even with newsletters, it's quite interesting. I had some interesting stats for newsletters. The average time reading an email newsletter is about 51 seconds, which is significantly more time than somebody spends reading a web page. So that's great. People do read through them a bit. 67% of people skip the introductory text. So they don't read the welcome to our weekly newsletter. What's the point? That text is actually nonsensical and it just taking out the top of your page. Okay. Again, just like in the search engines, the first two words of the headlines are read on average. So get to the point. Don't welcome to our is a waste of time. Only about 19% of people actually fully read a newsletter though. Same thing as writing for the web. You've got headlines, a little bit of content, headlines, a bit of content, then jump them through to the website. So don't embed too much. Don't make them think. Get them through to the website at the end of the day. And that way you'll actually find that you're getting people to your website. You can cross-sell them, upsell them, channel them through to what they're actually interested in. And just the last thing that I really want to say on email marketing is monitor, measure, adjust. Okay? What click-through rates are you getting? Really have a look at open rates. what people are keen through, what they're interested in, but adjust that and test it and then retry it. More often than not, what happens is you do a monthly newsletter. 2 days before, you suddenly realize you've got a monthly newsletter to do. You go off and you panic, you pack it full of content, you send it out, and you don't change anything each time, so it doesn't get any better. And if you continue doing the same thing, I'll guarantee you that eventually your click-through rates and open rates will decline because the market's changing. People are becoming less and less tolerant of email. It's becoming harder and harder to filter through what's good information, what's not. But just because of that, bear in mind, email, someone is four times more likely to click on a marketing message in an email than they are on a web page. So if you've got someone's trust, if they've given you their email address to actually allow them to email them, get it right for them, and you've got a much better chance of getting them through to your website.
I mean, email marketing is just so powerful, isn't it, Dan? I mean, you basically accumulate a list of people who have already told you that they're interested in what you've got to say and what you do, and you're basically feeding them information.
Yeah, and don't think of it as permission marketing, as it's often called. It's trust marketing. There's so many reasons to remove you from their kind of list of trusted email providers. So give them information that's useful to them. Don't send a newsletter because you send one. Make sure it's actually relevant. And don't fill newsletters with, we've got a new contract and aren't we clever? And look at the clever stuff we've done. It's got to be useful content to the user at the end of the day. So try and give them something practical that's useful for them. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to get them turning into business for you.
Well, Dan, some really fantastic tips and techniques there on email marketing, how to make it better. I believe we've got a couple of email questions, have we not? Just moving on.
Yeah, we absolutely have. There's just a quick one here from Richard Fitzgerald, who is an account executive at Cybercom, which is a digital marketing company, which I certainly shouldn't be talking about them because they're obviously a competitor of ours.
So you won't want to read out their URL then, Dan?
Absolutely not, but you can have a look at cybercom.ie, since I'm feeling so generous. Key thing is, he's just said, we were talking about brand monitoring a bit before. And brand monitoring, the whole idea of seeing what's going on online about your particular brand or a particular company. What Rich has actually asked is, we talked about a company called Magpie, that's a local company that's done this fantastic brand monitoring software, and just saying that he couldn't find it online. One of the key things to look at with this is, if you go to brandwatch.net, that's the actual brand that you're using to promote this. Magpie is a development company. Brandwatch.net is the actual product, and it's a great product. So I'd have a look at that, and there's some really useful information on there. Some really clever stuff. It uses artificial intelligence to work out if what's being said is good or bad, how often it's being referenced, and so on. So have a note of that, and good luck at playing with the tool.
Thanks for that, Richard. And there is another one, is there not, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. This was a hugely flattering email. So as I always say, flattery gets you everywhere. And this is from Una O'Reilly. So I hope I'm pronouncing your first name right, who is in Australia. So we seem to have a bit of a listenership in Australia.
Well, you must read it out if it's flattering.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Just saying, I hope your day is flowing beautifully. And basically saying that they really liked our relaxed, organic and conversational style of our podcast. So they quite like us rambling like we normally do. And saying it was a godsend, having recently discovered it, I'm an avid subscriber. So thank you very much. The key question was really, how can you listen to the first 16 podcasts? Andy and I made a conscious effort that we would only have the last batch of podcasts available. The reason for this, to be honest, Andy, would you like to suggest what the reason for that was?
Excuse me, I'm going to cough. Sorry about that. Okay, we don't mind anyone listening to the first, 16 or so episodes of the podcast, but we have to do a disclaimer. The further back in time you go with our podcasts, the more comical they are, because it was the very early days of me producing podcasts, and I seem to remember, I have very fond memories of the very, very first podcast that me and Dan, well, we did. There was you were there, Dan, weren't you? And there was a couple of others I seem to remember, but we were literally huddled around a table, and instead of having a proper mic, I had this little sort of really wimpy, tiny sort of condenser mic that I got with a mini disc player that I'd bought years earlier, and I'd attached it to a weight to keep it in one place, and I think I was using an old tape recorder or a mini disc recorder to record it, and it was just really echoey and just rubbish, basically. I mean, the content was good, but the audio quality was horrendous. So you're perfectly welcome to listen to them, and Dan will explain in a minute where you can find them, or certainly where you'll be able to find them in a week or two. But just understand that these early episodes aren't really a true reflection of certainly my workmanship. And if you want a good laugh, listen to the first few episodes.
My favourite thing as well, if you look at us on iTunes, we're very popular on iTunes, still doing really well, normally in the top five kind of business and marketing podcasts, which we're really pleased about. But if you read our comments, there's loads of really positive comments. And I'd really encourage you to go and leave a positive comment for us in iTunes, because it helps us kind of get the podcast promoted. But there's one that says, content's great, but it's really amateurish. I can hear seagulls in the background, and I think there's a baby crying. And there was a baby crying in the background, I think, walking down, because we're in the South Lanes in Brighton, so there's lots of people passing by. So, yeah, we like to keep it real.
And my phone went off in one, and I just left it in and didn't edit it out. See if you can... There's a competition, viewers, listeners. See if you can spot the episode where my phone goes off.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll find some freebie to send you in return. So, Oons in Oz, thank you very much for the question. I'm glad you want to actually listen to the other podcasts. Do bear in mind Andy's comments, but they will be available at ai-digital.com/podcasts. Okay, so that's ai-digital.com/podcast. That's our normal website. Just go through to the podcast section, and you will find them all listed off in there sooner rather than later, and be able to download them from there.
And I think probably what we'll have, Dan, we'll probably have to have a separate little link near the bottom, like go and get the archived episode. Because the way it works is, on the actual RSS feed, we only have, I think, is it the last 20 episodes? I think it was the last 20.
Yeah.
So, of course, as each month goes by, another old episode will drop off the beginning, but they can be found.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And in the archive, so you will be able to get them.
Yeah, and we've also started to record some specialist ones as well. So for particular sectors, I think we've done one in there for recruitment, and we're looking at recording some others as well. So you may be interested to see what other podcasts we've done as well.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for your expertise and your knowledge. And we'll finish the show off with part two of that interview with Kieran from UKSA. Enjoy. Hello there, and I'm talking to Kieran Rogers of UKSA in part two of an interview over Skype. Kieran's over in the Isle of Wight. Hello, Kieran.
Hello.
Now, we talked last time about your use of Salesforce.com, which is an online software-on-demand CRM system. And we talked a little bit about its integration, or the way you were integrating it with AdWords. But I want to talk about something else now, because I know you're using another plugin, aren't you, that helps you to manage the email responses?
Yeah. It's a thing called Sales Genius. And what Sales Genius enables me to do is to create on-the-fly email campaigns and send them out to any of the inquiries that we've had through our CRM system. Nothing unusual about that. There's lots of systems that will do that. The thing that really caught my eye about Sales Genius is it actually enables you, if you include within your email links to content on your website, it enables you to actually track who looks at what, which really, really useful. You're actually able to gather some really valuable information. And we're primarily using it as a lead qualification tool. Increasingly, we rely on online advertising to generate leads for our training courses. And you do get very large volumes coming through when you go on the online advertising, get the right keywords and get the right campaigns going. And I really needed a tool which would enable me to quickly find out who the hotter prospects were so that we could give them more time to help and assist them with what they were looking to do. It's good. My sales team love it. They love the way it gives them the ability to really not have to pester everybody. You know, you can see from the actions people take who's really requiring our need. And before we had this, we had a very lengthy process where we laboriously phone everybody who'd actually inquired. And this enables us to really focus on the people who only really want help. So very often you do fill out a form or request information on the web that you're not wanting to be bothered about once you've been sent the information. But, you know, equally, you might want to know a lot more about it. And this tool has given us the ability to sift that out.
So is this actually a plugin to Salesforce, Kieran, or is it a standalone thing?
No, it's a plugin for Salesforce. And I know it sounds like I'm must be on commission for Salesforce, but I assure you it's not the case. It's just that's the system we've been using for the last 6 years.
Yeah.
I came across this company. Salesforce ran a conference every year. Last year it was in San Francisco, and I'm very lucky to go along to it. And they have a huge area with all the different software developers who are using the Force.com as a development platform. And you can go around all the different booths and speak with people and find out what they do. There were quite a few companies were offering this sort of functionality within Salesforce. But I really focused in on Sales Genius because their offering was much more cost effective.
Yeah.
It's used by some quite big players. I mean, I know from speaking to Sales Genius that I believe BT make use of it. Various other big companies. So
give us a typical example of some of the benefits that a tool like this gives you. I mean, obviously, you know, you've sent out maybe a newsletter or an offer to your list. What does Sales Genius let you do from that point on?
Well, Sales Genius is—I think of it much less as a list tool. There are other tools that are better for sort of mass broadcasting email. With Sales Genius, it's much more a tailored tool to my sales team. So, if you imagine I'm a salesperson and I have 5 new leads come in that have inquired about our training courses, perhaps they're looking at career changes.
Yeah.
This sales team member that owns those leads can actually send out a Sales Genius email to just those new leads for that day. And we've developed some templates in it. One of the best templates that we've made use of is one which actually explains different career options within the industry and then links to the various different products that we have on our web page that provide you with an opportunity for careers in those areas. It's been really valuable because off the back of sending a lead this email, I can actually see whether they opened it, when they opened it, and which pages on our website they went to look at. It's a little bit big brotherish, I guess, but I would add you can only see what pages on your website that they've looked at. So if they go off and start looking at something else on the web, I've got no idea what that is.
Yeah.
It's purely limited to pages within your own website. But it's really, really useful. And very often you can actually track through. You sort of get little snapshots, really. So, you know, you can go into Sales Genius and you have a little list which constantly updates itself and gives you the person who's most recently looked at one of your Sales Genius emails.
Yeah.
And it'll tell you how long they've spent on average on each of the pages. Even down to actually being able to see, actually, this person is on our website now and they're looking at this page.
In real time.
In real time. It's very, very powerful. Very, very powerful.
So it sounds more like the way you would use this tool is not so much for broadcasting newsletters and offers and things like that, but more to respond to specific inquiries. So presumably you have like a number of templates that you can make on the system.
We do, yeah. You can create as many templates as you want. Within the standard Sales Genius contract that we've got, I mean, we have access to send 2,500 emails a month. And you'd very quickly absorb that if you were sending everybody an email.
Yeah.
And it would actually be, you'd get swamped with data. And this is giving quite a lot of detailed information on what people do with what you send to them. It just wouldn't be effective like that. It is very much about sending to targeted leads to find out a little bit more. One of the nice features is that I could maybe I'm dealing with slightly numbers, maybe bigger numbers, and perhaps I'm dealing with 15 to 20 leads a day. I could send email one, which could contain some interesting content. And then I could very easily sort out, well, okay, everybody that looked at email one, I'd like to send them email two.
Automatically?
Automatically, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Filters that down. What tends to happen is the sales team prefer to send things out manually. because these emails are quite personalized, and by nature of that, they're quite motivating. And I think it's a very poor show to send out quite a personalized email en masse. Mm. And then when the person responds to it in quite a personal way, they kind of just get sort of robot response.
Who are you?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, what was that all about? Why are you bothering me? I'm busy.
Yeah.
So it's, as a company, we really believe on customer relationship, building a really good relationship. And there's a lot of trust people put in us if they're coming to us to retrain for new careers. So, you know, we like to pull that through into all the processes that we're working with. And Sales Genius has given us a very powerful tool for doing that.
Kieran, do you think you could quantify in any way the sort of sales boost that you have gained from using this type of system? Because I love this type of systems, these sort of semi-automated or marketing assistant systems, as I like to call them. These systems that sort of track what's going on and or suggest to humans everything that they can do to help waft more and more people into the sales funnel, but then also look after them. What sort of gains have you sort of experienced?
I mean, there's so many, and as you say, they aren't quite difficult to quantify. I would say that because of these tools, I'm able to focus my team of four and focus their time on the leads that are genuinely interested in us. Before I had these tools, I had to focus the team across the board on all leads. You know, so literally everybody had to have the follow-up calls, whether they wanted it or not, because it was my only way of sorting out who was genuinely interested and who was just casually inquiring. Mm. I mean, our team typically have around 100 new inquiries every week from the campaigns that we run. That can be as high as 150 in a week. That may not sound much, but when you consider we'll be in contact with those customers for anything up to 3 to 4 months before they might make a decision to actually retrain. Mm. That's quite a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. And when you happen to phone 20 people who come through an AdWords campaign who were just very casually browsing, you can't help but feel like you're wasting your time and theirs and being a little bit intrusive. Mm. Whereas by using sort of more targeted emails and using some of these tools, you're actually able to allow them to qualify themselves. And a lot of the tools that we use within Salesforce are very focused on that, you know, allowing the customer to qualify themselves. Mm. And that means I can dedicate far more of my team's advisory time actually helping the customers who really need the help rather than spending a lot of time. It might only be 2 or 3 minutes, but 2 or 3 minutes over 30 people is... Those hours soon build up. Yeah. I would say over the course of a year, we I don't know, I would hazard a guess that we'd probably gain an extra 3 weeks of time amongst the team just with this one tool.
Kieran, thank you so much for talking to us. I'm very, so glad we had this conversation, because most of what we talk about on internet marketing is to do with the sort of widespread marketing of your product or service. But this is much more close. It's when the clients get very close to the funnel, and this is more about sort of wafting them in. It's almost more of a sales process, isn't it? And it's using the internet to sort of finish off that sales process and sort of close the deal, which is why I find it so interesting. And I love the way we have these systems. And if you can get the right tools, like you obviously have got the right tools, you can sort of produce a system that sort of semi-automates that process. Not fully automated, but semi-automates it. It makes it easier for the humans to sort of fulfill that final sales task, if you like.
Absolutely. I think the really important thing with these online systems is that they're very, very flexible in terms of what you do. I hate the term process, because when I'm dealing with customers, these are genuine people. You know, they have interests and needs and lives. And as soon as you start processing people, you're just in the wrong place completely. And you're just going to be a bit of a pain in the ass for them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because these tools are very customizable, you're really able to tailor the customer experience to a good one, to a positive one.
Yes.
And really focus the time and help and assistance on the people who really want that time, help and assistance. So, I mean, that would be the thing I'd encourage everybody who's perhaps looking at automating processes to look at. But by all means, automate things, because that builds in all sorts of efficiencies and gives all sorts of time gains and advantages to a business. But really make sure you keep that human element hardwired in there somewhere, because it's the one thing customers really like.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Now, listen, I've got one more question for you, because I know that you've been completely unrelated to CRM systems and online systems like that, but you have been using quite a nice online video service to good effect, haven't you? You want to tell us a little bit about that?
This was something I sought out to solve a problem that we were having. It's a thing called Jing, J-I-N-G, and it's a really neat little application. There's lots of software out there that you can buy which enables you to record kind of screencasts, record action on a screen and supply an audio voiceover to go with that. But they're quite pricey, and working for a charity, obviously spending money on software isn't a high priority. We'd far rather spend it on helping young kids and children get into water sports.
Yeah.
And we were looking for a solution to achieve this, and somebody flagged up Jing, and I think it's a bit special. It's a bit brilliant. It's a free application. You can get it for Mac or PC, which was a big plus for me, because I love using Mac, but I know not everybody does.
Mm.
It enables you to record a screencast. So this is a recording of what's going on with your screen with an audio voiceover, where you sort of may perhaps walk somebody through an application or how to do something on the computer. We've all seen them. They're quite common when you get new software applications. You can do the whole video tutorials, and it enables you to create something like that. But the whole thing's free. Which is bizarre. And what it does is it creates a flash video of the whole thing for
you. An FLV?
Yeah. And it'll upload it onto a free server so you can share it with other people.
It just keeps getting better and better. So it's basically a piece of software that you download locally, install on your local PC.
Yeah.
You then use it to capture whatever you're doing on the screen, and then presumably you press a button and it uploads it to a free storage service somewhere.
Yeah, it does. The company that do it generated it for their own use. I think they're a software developer, and they thought it was so good they should share it with other people.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
It does have one limitation, which I found. You can only record 5 minutes worth of stuff. So there I was, busy waffling on for 10 minutes, and I only captured the first five. But it was a steep learning curve. But actually, that's a good thing, you know, because actually no one wants to listen to a 20-minute presentation. It would be like watching somebody's holiday movies from beginning to end. It's not a good experience. You just want to go in there, get the information you want, and get out. And what we found is that you can use it to, if you need to extend it, you could do sort of four or five short how-tos, each one focused on a specific topic. And from a marketing perspective, it's got all sorts of uses. We run a recruitment website called yachtcareers.com, and that enables our students to put their CVs online and promote themselves to employers within the yachting and water sports industry. And we quite often get people who, they're coming into water sports, they didn't really see it was a requirement that they became IT experts. And when you're sort of walking them through how to use the online database and put their CVs up and upload photos of themselves and stuff, it can be very time-consuming doing that one-to-one. And they don't tend to work terribly well with written instructions, because they just tend to tie themselves up in knots and get lost. So we're looking to create a number of these kind of short video how-tos and make them available for the students to make use of. But you get all sorts of marketing applications, depending on what you're doing. You just kind of need to start thinking, well, what could I demonstrate? It might be a PowerPoint presentation or a sales presentation you might ching up there. It's all very easy, all very straightforward, and once it's installed, you can ching to your heart's content.
It's always good, isn't it, to... I always think that one of the number one rules of marketing is to be useful and help people, because then that will help, you know, sort of... You would tend to gain a reputation as someone who is a helper and someone who's trustworthy. It's just building trust. So if you build or if you make some videos that show people how to use stuff or how to do common things that a lot of people find difficult, then that's probably a good thing. A couple of questions. What sort of control do you have over the, for example, the size of the video? And can you edit it if you fluff up?
You can export it as a editable flash file.
Yeah.
And you can download the videos that you create to edit within external applications. To be honest, I haven't bothered. because it just looked more work than than a need for the way I've used it. But no, fairly flexible. The whole thing doesn't just exist online. You can download the files and convert into different formats.
Well, that's a fantastic tip, Kieran. Thank you so much for that. And thanks for talking to us again.
My pleasure. I'd be really interested to find out how people use it. Now, even actually just down to showing your colleagues, we use it quite a bit here for staff training. We're just about to move away from Outlook and move on to Gmail. Yeah. And I shall be creating some Gmail movies to actually show staff how to do fairly rudimentary things.
Oh, well, send one my way.
Yeah. You, are you a big Gmail fan?
I've recently got into it. I don't use it that much at the moment, but I can see it might go up possibly in the future because I'm one of these people that have got about 50,000 email addresses and my Gmail account is just one other of those 50,000. But I actually use Gmail. I actually use it for backing up, to be honest. I have a Linux server and it just backs up every day and just Gmails it as an attachment to my Gmail account. And every so often I'll go in and have a tidy up. But that's what I use it for, which is probably a bit of a strange use. But yes, Gmail is quite useful.
Yeah, we're looking to use the calendaring feature, shared calendaring feature.
Oh, I love Google Calendar.
So we've been rolling out Google Apps. A little bit scared of doing that, but it's the time.
Well, perhaps that's another interview. We shall have to talk to you again about that, see how you get on.
Yeah, give us a couple of months to get our feet under the table with it. So yeah, I'd be very happy to talk about how that goes.
Well, Kieran, you're starting to break up, so that's probably a good time to end the interview. Thank you so much for your time. And just once again, your web address is
www.uksa.org.
Fantastic. Kieran Rogers, thank you very, very much indeed.
Thank you, Andy.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Now, we would really like to hear from you. So if you have any questions or comments, send them to info@ai-digital.com and feel free to send in MP3 files as well and we'll play them. If you're a subscriber, we'd like to thank you for your valuable time. If you haven't subscribed yet and you'd like this show delivered to your earbuds automatically, you can find Internet Marketing on iTunes. Just search under the Business and Marketing and Management categories. Or you can find us at Feedburner at feeds.feedburner.com/academyim. We'd also encourage you to leave comments on iTunes. Well, this is Andy White signing off, wishing you the best until we see you next time on Internet Marketing.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.